This is Kate Swanell for the NJA, and today we're talking with Dr. Liz Miles, the President of the RACGP. Thanks for your time, Liz.
Oh, thank you, Kate.
You're about to hand over to the next President. Your conference is next week, I think, yes?
That's right, yes.
Let's have a bit of an overview of your time in the big chair.
Yeah, okay.
It's been pretty turbulent.
It certainly has. And I guess, being RACGP president is being in the fast lane.
Yes.
And you never quite know what's around the corner. I think we have, in the 2 years that I've been there, we've seen a change of government. We've seen a fairly major change in terms of health policy. And with the budget coming down, we're now seeing changes in the funding proposals for general practice, the support systems for general practice, and also the training for general practice.
Does it feel like there's a bit of a perfect storm developing in terms of how GPs are being funded and supported and looked after?
Well, I think that it is an opportunity, and it's something that we need to actually be out there as a profession leading the debate, because, you know, whilst all of these things have been put up for grabs, if there's a vacuum, who knows what we'll get. But we do know that the time is right for a change in the way in which we fund general practice. We now live in a very different world to the world when the Medicare system was first created and fee-for-service was really a very appropriate way to manage most consultations. These days, we have a lot of new technological advances that
yep.
mean that we can potentially do video consultations, we can do telephone consultations. Overseas, my counterpart in the UK tells me that in her practice, 40% of the consultations are not done face-to-face. So, if there are efficiencies to be gained, they are by practicing in a new and innovative way. But in order to do that, we actually do need to address our funding system.
Because, of course, video conferences and those sort of things aren't...
There's very, very limited Medicare funding for video consultations at the moment. It's limited to consultations that are essentially between a specialist and the patient,
right.
Where the GP can be part of that, but it's still really a specialist consultation.
What's the state of play with the whole co-payment issue right now?
I think that certainly the RACGP's position around the co-payment is that it's not an evidence-based policy where you get better health outcomes and greater health efficiencies across the board. We have had serious concerns about its impact in terms of access and equity for patients.
Mm.
It would be administratively difficult, and we believe there'd be very little actual benefit. It is a way of looking at funding reform, I guess, but we would rather take a much bigger picture point of view rather than a line item approach, which is
yep.
essentially what the co-payment's doing. It's looking at, we can save this amount from the MBS, this amount from, pathology and radiology and GP consultations. That we'd rather actually take a much more holistic view of what type of health system we want to create, how do we want it to operate, how are we going to make sure that the dollars follow the need. The patients who have the highest needs are the ones who should be getting, the most financial support, really.
Yeah, yeah.
And the doctors who are doing that work also really need to be supported.
Are you finding much encouragement from the Minister of Health, for example? Are you getting any word that there might be some compromise in the air? Or?
Well, in our discussions with the Minister, he has certainly been open to looking at other ways of funding chronic disease management,
yeah.
And they are very aware of the limitations of the existing system. So he's been open to those discussions. In terms of the actual co-payment, we haven't felt that we could support that policy
yeah.
in any way, because we really haven't seen it as something that's going to lead to better health outcomes. I mean, the evidence around co-payments overseas is that the only people it really impacts on are those who have the least amount of money, who often carry the greatest burden of illness. And that's not the group that we want to start discouraging from going to the doctor.
I was talking this morning with Ian Cameron from RDA, and he said sometimes it feels to him like just when you get something working pretty well, there's a change of government or a new
yes.
budget, and it's
yes.
all it all gets taken apart, probably with all good intentions.
Yes.
But it's like we're reinventing the healthcare
right.
wheel every 5 years or so. And
yes.
he was
yes.
a frustrated man. Do you feel that frustration?
Look, I do feel that frustration. I mean, I think it takes an enormous amount of energy to work out policy, to go through all your discussions, and then. You do have a change of government and suddenly you're back at square one. So it's a little bit like that, I think, with the Medicare locals. So, you know, Medicare locals are, they're not mature organisations at this point in time. So I think we have to expect that they would have had problems. But what we've seen is that rather than sort of, you know, allowing them to evolve and develop, we've actually thrown it up in the air a bit again and
yeah.
putting it out to tender. So, you know, that's something where we want to, again, have significant input as a profession around what sort of support we think we need. And having been involved with the RACGP since 1996, I've been through the GP training exercise before.
Yes.
And I was on the first board of GPET when we were put things out to competitive tender. And
yes.
so it does very much feel like we're going back to that place again.
The Medical Students Association put out a press release yesterday talking about internships again and how, you know, less than, there's going to be about 260 graduates with no intern place.
Yes.
Is that a concern for the college? Is there anything the college can do to help get graduates
yes, yes.
into places?
Look, I mean, we have, obviously we've been very keen to continue with the pre-vocational general practice placement program.
Yeah.
That was scrapped to support increased GP training places. But in fact, the PGPPP program was really successful and did provide an opportunity for internships to occur in the community. So it's one way in which we can increase the number of internships in a quality teaching environment and potentially, you know, allow more interns to actually get a job.
Have you enjoyed your time?
Oh, look, I have really enjoyed my time. I mean, it's been a bit of a roller coaster ride. It's been a fantastic learning opportunity for me, and I've certainly done things I would never have done otherwise.
Like Beyond Insight last week.
Like Beyond Insight.
Speaking of Ebola, there's reports this morning that the damn things hit Texas.
Yes.
Does it change your view any on what you were saying on Insight, that we're in pretty good shape to deal with it if it does?
Look, I think we are still in really good shape. I mean, I think that going through the whole swine flu pandemic, it was a really good dry run. You know, I mean, it wasn't a severe disease in the end, but it absolutely got us focused on what are the sort of communication issues that come up, what are the questions that arise at a very practical level in a surgery when things are changing on a week-by-week basis,
yeah.
Including, you know, you test, you know, which people do you test? Do we test everyone? Now that's changed, actually, and we're not testing people. So just actually having our systems in place, and out of that, we did get some funding for the RACGP to develop a pandemic influenza toolkit. So, and we've got a disaster kit as well. So that's enabled us to put together a really good resource that practices can go through at a time like this just to see whether they're prepared, and then to actually have a strategy to follow once, you know, there's something on the horizon.
Julie Bishop said yesterday that she hadn't been asked to send Australian medics to Africa to help out. Is that something we should be waiting to be asked, or should we just be going?
Look, I think it is something that should be part of our overall aid package, really, where we're looking at trying to assist particularly developing countries. The Ebola virus is a pretty scary virus at one level. At another level, it's actually not that easy to catch. So if you actually do follow, with personal protective equipment and follow the right procedures, it should be relatively safe for healthcare workers to go there.
Yeah.
And I think we've seen that there are actually quite a lot of Australian healthcare workers who would love to be able to help out.
Have you always been a GP? Is that always your path?
No. I actually started off as a high school teacher. So I was a high school teacher down here in Melbourne, actually.
Cool.
And I taught biology and maths, but I was always pretty keen to actually be far more hands-on with my science. But I think it does actually take a little bit of maturity, and I was probably a bit too young when I left school to make that kind of decision. So I started studying medicine when I was 28.
That's a... hard path to hoe. I mean, it's a long, long
road.
It is
a long path. 10 years of undergraduate university, but it's not that uncommon these days.
Yeah.
And, I think it's got benefits. I think it's a lot easier to do medicine when you're older in terms of just, dealing with people and their lives, the complexities, and not getting too flustered by it. The downside is that medical training is so long that, you're still training into your 40s, and that means that other things like having families and, making some of those other life choices need to somehow or other integrate with that.
Was general practice always going to be the way you were going?
Look, it was, actually, because I really love talking to people,
yeah.
And I really enjoy their stories. I feel like I learn as much from them, probably more than they get from me. And the other thing is that I'm, I've got broad interests. So when I went through medicine, I found most things really interesting. And the thought that I would never do that again, that I might have nothing to do with obstetrics and family medicine, or that I wouldn't do any mental health again, felt like I'd be losing something. And so general practice had a huge appeal. And I think we're very privileged, really. I mean, we do get to have long-term relationships with our patients. And, the sort of trust and the confidence that you get from that is huge. And as I say, people tell me things that I don't think I would ever hear in any other context.
Yeah.
And I'm, they come to me at the most vulnerable time in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to really assist people then, it's a huge privilege, and it's something that I value every day when I go to work.
You mentioned that you started studying medicine late. Do you think that's something that might be worthwhile generally for med students?
It's got pros and cons, as I say, the medical training, it takes a long time, and so, if you want to do a hospital-based specialty, trying to do that at the same time as you're having children, because you're now in your 30s, is, that's quite challenging.
I mean,
I think we are getting better at adapting to that. There's more opportunities for women to job share in specialty training, and that's really important. But, being younger does give you a little bit more time. But at the same time, I do think that medicine is also about life experience, and coming to it with a bit of life experience does make it a whole lot easier.
The other big push that medical students are on about is the mental health of medical students. I mean, perhaps having a gap year or a couple of years would help that situation as well, just learning how to deal with...
Yes. No, absolutely. And I really think that, part of surviving medicine is about having a balance in life, about having other interests, about having friends who are not doctors. It's actually being part of a community. And so, you're probably a bit more likely to have that if you haven't just gone straight through your HSC, straight into a, 5 or 6 year degree, and then straight into a hospital system, all of which demand a huge amount of your time.
So you're handing the baton over next week.
Indeed.
What words of encouragement do you have for your successor?
I'm really excited about Frank taking on the role. I think he's got a wealth of experience as a GP. He's got 30 years experience. He's a rural-based GP in Western Australia. And he's got a lot of energy and enthusiasm that I think that the profession will really appreciate. But he's also got a lot of passion and really wants to see general practice go in the direction of quality, of caring for individuals, of actually taking back some of the territory that we've lost to specialists. And that's about caring for people in hospitals as well. I think Frank will do a great job. There are so many wonderful GPs who are part of the college who have got great expertise that you can call upon at any time, and who definitely contribute to all of the policy that we produce and the ideas. So, he doesn't have to make all these decisions himself. He should just tap into all of the wonderful GPs there, and also this fantastic support that management can provide.
What's next for you?
In the short term, I'm actually looking forward to getting a bit of focus on my practice. We've got a number of exciting projects happening there. We're developing.
You're in the north of
Sydney? I am in northern Sydney, and I'm in an interesting practice that's actually funded by New South Wales Health.
Yeah.
So we've got some projects developing a collaborative Aboriginal health clinic. We've also got we're setting up a GP clinic to support community mental health patients who don't have GPs. And we've got a childhood obesity project happening there. So I've got my own little projects happening within the practice. I'm still going to stay involved in a number of committees with the college, particularly ones associated with education, which is my strong area of interest, and it's also going to be an area where we're going to have to do a lot of work over the next couple of years.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Kate.
Thank you for your presidency.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.